From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. Almost everyone has heard of the Cascadia subduction zone and the very real threat our region faces regarding a major earthquake and tsunami. We've also heard that when such an earthquake hits, major infrastructure like roads, bridges, and hospitals could be rendered unusable. But there's also another critical system that will most likely be knocked out, and that's communications. Our reliance on high-tech infrastructure like cell phones and internet will most likely fail, and the only way individuals and municipalities will be able to communicate will be through a somewhat older tool, the ham radio. Today on Oregon on the Record, you'll hear from ham radio experts who are part of a network of folks who have been training for a catastrophe, and if and when it comes, they'll become a critical link in a major support system. You'll hear about it next on Oregon on the Record. Many of you might think ham radio is old school, but as you'll hear next, that old-fashioned equipment may become a true lifesaver in our community in the event of catastrophe. Bonnie Altus, a volunteer and the Oregon Section Emergency Coordinator for the American Radio Relay League, and Doug Jimenez, he is the Emergency Communications Officer for the Oregon Department of Emergency Management. Thanks to you both for coming on and talking with us.
Oh, you're welcome. I always look for opportunities to kind of spread the word about what we do in amateur radio.
Yeah. You know, Bonnie, I'm going to start with you because I think probably a lot of people might have an idea, but I really want you to kind of give us the overall picture of what is a ham radio operator? What do you do? You know, that sort of a thing.
A ham radio operator is licensed by the Federal Communications Commission, mm-hmm. and we pass a written test about electronics operating practices and RF safety.
Radio frequency, is that RF?
Radio frequency, yes.
Right,
We are allowed to use specific frequencies based on our license classes, mm-hmm. and it's a hobby where there's a lot of different things we can choose to do. Mm-hmm. So each person has a different focus of what they enjoy. Some focus on emergency preparedness, either personally and for their families, mm-hmm. or they, like me, they register to support county or city emergency management if there were an event of some sort, as well as providing support for public service events and search and rescue activities.
You know, Doug, it's kind of interesting as I'm listening to Bonnie talk, and she's a volunteer, and I imagine, you know, it's as somebody who works for the Oregon Department of Emergency Management, you know, how important are these ham radio operators to your organization, a statewide organization, but also, you know, to county and municipal entities as well?
So we do like to, they are important, mm-hmm. although we haven't used them at the state level in quite a few years.
Okay.
The counties have quite a bit. And they used, I think the first time we used them, or the most recent time we used them at the state level was actually back in the winter storms of 2007.
Okay.
Where we lost total communications with four counties due to fiber breaks and power outages and that sort of thing. And it was at that time, a lot of the amateur radio operators stepped up and started and just, you know, jumped in and said, hey, let's just do this and help out the counties, talk with the state. And they did a fantastic job.
Yeah.
And following that event, the current governor at that time earmarked $250,000 to equip all county emergency operations centers with amateur radio stations.
Hmm.
And then it was up to them to find their volunteers. So yes, they do. And more recently, in the wildfires of 2020 and 2021, we had lost a lot of communications due to wildfire, including down in Lane County, and they had a lot of ham radio operators step forward there and help communicate from the areas that, up the McKenzie River and up the Santa Ym River canyons to get information back and, pass information to and forward to the county. So it is an important thing that we do. And it's something that most of us are very passionate about. You know, let's see how we can improve that and what we can do. Well, what else we can do for our our local people and our county governments.
Interesting, interesting. Let me reintroduce you both to the audience. We're talking with Bonnie Altus. She's a volunteer with the American Radio Relay League and part of the Oregon Section Emergency Coordinator group. And then we're talking with Doug Jimenez. He is an emergency communications officer with the Oregon Department of Emergency Management. You know, Bonnie, I think it's interesting. Obviously, you know, so many of us are so used to, you know, technology that at our fingertips with our cellular phones and other devices that we're just plugged into the world at all the time, and it somewhat for somebody my age almost boggles the mind how ubiquitous it is, how connective it is. But obviously, I think a lot of us maybe don't realize that, especially in a big emergency, I'm thinking an earthquake or a massive wildfire or a massive storm event, which Doug just talked about, you know, those things can fail. Why are ham radios perhaps more robust in a situation like that versus, you know, the cell phones and other communications that we're used to?
There is a lot of work and experimentation being done in ham radio with various digital mm-hmm. Items such as mesh networks and accessing stations remotely via the computer or cell phone. But generally, they have lower bandwidth than the cellular services that we're accustomed to.
Okay.
I think by using the historical analog technology and ham radio, it provides more reliability in a critical event. If there were a big situation, a major event, where some of our repeater systems, which allow us to communicate a longer distance with our handheld radios, if some of those were damaged or not accessible for some reason, it's possible for us to make an antenna and go on to other frequencies where the radio wave goes over the mountains better and allows us to continue communications, find a way to continue communications regardless of the event. I think it's the reliability and the experience we have with those allows them to continue working and allows people that have been working with this for a while to find ways to get the message through no matter what.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Doug, as I was listening to you talk, you know, you said sort of, I think you talked about, you know, it's been a few decades now, but the big weather event, and I think you said 2007, it seemed like the ham radio operators kind of just sort of jumped in and helped, which is obviously great. Is there a more formalized structure? I imagine you've done at the Department of Emergency Management a lot of tabletop exercises where you're planning for big events, and certainly on everybody's mind oftentimes is something like a Cascadia earthquake. And I'm kind of wondering, you know, if knock on wood, it doesn't, but if a Cascadia earthquake happens in the next few years or something like that, you know, how would your office or perhaps local offices, how would you engage with all the resources possible, including ham radio operators, to be able to communicate to the public as best you can?
So we actually do have plans out there that cover those situations, and we do practice them. We do exercises with operators on the air, you know, with the Aries group that Bonnie's runs, plus all the other non-Aries amateur radio groups that are out there that support the counties as well. And we basically, we have it listed, and it's been basically the same way for decades now, that if you want to be able to contact us from from somewhere outside the Salem area, these are the frequencies that we monitor. So we have specific frequencies we monitor. Plus, we use a system called WinLink, which is basically email over radio. And that is truly our primary backup because it's a digital format with a, you know, with a text output. So we don't have to worry about the translation between what somebody hears and what they're writing down. So and we have a an email address on that. And, you know, they can get on. We request that if they have the capability that they message us directly on that, and we can pick it up regardless of whether, you know, there's power or internet or outages or anything. So we just do it over radio. And that's already pre-coordinated, and all the counties and cities know how to contact us.
Bonnie, I'm going to go to you. You know, talk about how you go about getting a specific license to be a ham radio operator.
There's three levels of license. The first one is the tech license, and more than half of the ham radio operators in Oregon have the tech license. The second is general, and the third is extra. Mm-hmm. For each exam, you take a written test, and the questions are pulled from a published question pool. So you have the ability to study all of the questions and answers. So you can study either using a book that teaches you the concepts that you need to understand to answer those questions, or you can take a class. Most of the larger ham radio clubs have classes and offer test sessions regularly. And so if anybody goes to ARRL.org, they can search for a list of clubs with the contact information to find out about local opportunities for taking a test or taking a class.
Okay. You know, Doug, kind of taking off from that, is there specific, if someone is a licensed ham radio operator and wants to become, you know, wants to help in the event of an emergency, is there specific training above and beyond operating the ham radio that they need to have, or at least you'd like them to have, to be able to become part of this sort of a citizen's brigade to help out in a big community-wide emergency?
So we do have some requirements if they want to be registered with the state as a ham, as a volunteer operator. Mm-hmm. The best place to start is at the county, and most of the counties have the same requirements as the state does. They're basic instant command system classes that are free online from FEMA. There's just two of the basic courses, and then some more about how the structure of instant command works. And then there's also one other one about basic emergency operation center practices. And that's all we require. Plus, mm-hmm. we require a background check as well. Okay. It's an easy thing to do. I've got 15 volunteers that work directly for Oregon Department of Emergency Management. And then we work with, you know, the counties that have volunteers. And, you know, I think some of the bigger counties have, you know, have over 100 volunteers. But
wow.
We highly encourage you to get together, you know, encourage people to work with their county and sometimes even the larger cities with their emergency management offices and just say, hey, I would like to volunteer and help out and practice for disaster.
You know, Bonnie, it's obviously cell phones have been a big part of this, but obviously there's been this sort of groundswell over the last couple of decades of citizens, you know, whether it's recording crimes occurring, you know, to help out with law enforcement or just kind of, you know, utilizing whatever they have on them, oftentimes a cell phone, to help in regards to those sorts of things. It kind of feels like, and I'd love to hear from you, kind of the, you know, I want to say, you know, that there's a lot of people out there that maybe we don't even know who really have taken upon themselves, like yourself, a volunteer, to become part of this important, you know, emergency network. It seems like there's a lot of very altruistic people that are ready at a moment's notice to be a part of the solution in case a big emergency happens.
Yes, there are. Like I said, a lot of people are getting their licenses now because they're interested in emergency preparedness.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes they will have their handheld radios and their mobile radios in their vehicles with them at all times so that they can participate wherever they might be if something were to happen. Of course, the parts of the country where there's tornadoes and hurricanes have a lot more opportunities to participate in emergencies than what we have here in Oregon, but we still need to be prepared and be ready to go when it happens. A lot of cities and local areas have CERT teams that may communicate up to the ham radio operators, either with ham radio or with GMRS radios, to get messages to the county if an event were to happen. A lot of ham radio operators monitor specific frequencies, so if something were to happen, they would be alerted right away. Oftentimes, they choose frequencies that aren't very busy, so that they aren't distracted. But if something happens, they do hear from it. Before the days of cell phones, it was very common to have auto patch on repeaters, so you could call for help through a ham radio auto patch. When we didn't have cell phones to carry around all the time, but there's less of that now.
Sure. And what is an auto patch again? I'm sorry.
There's a radio on the repeater system that we access to make our signal go further. For our, like our handheld radios generally operate by line of sight.
Okay.
And so we communicate through a repeater on a mountaintop to enable people on the other side of the mountain to hear us.
Got it.
And some of those repeaters had a telephone attached to them, so ham radio operators could connect to that and make a phone call.
I see. Let me really quickly reintroduce you to our audience. We're talking with Bonnie Altus. She is a volunteer with the American Radio Relay League and is also the Oregon Section Emergency Coordinator for that group. And Doug Jimenez, he's an Emergency Communications Coordinator with the Office or Emergency Communications Officer with the Oregon Department of Emergency Management. Doug, you know, Bonnie just mentioned something, CERT teams, and I want to also ask, I have heard from different, when we've done shows about response during a crisis, I've heard that oftentimes, you know, it could be that individual neighborhoods and individual neighbors might be the first line of defense, or not defense, but first line of support during a major event like an earthquake. I wondered, are ham radios, ham radio operators, and even what Bonnie talked about, these people who have just handheld line of sight radios, I imagine they're very critical in the overall emergency response, especially in something like a Cascadia earthquake.
Yeah, absolutely. And the she also mentioned the General Mobile Radio Service or GMRS radios, which are they require a license, but they don't require any testing to actually operate. And that's what a lot of the community emergency response teams use. Are the GMRS radios because they're inexpensive and they work really well. And then we work some of the CERT teams also have ham radio operators, and they can get the information either up to the city level to request assistance for their neighborhood, or to the county level if the city isn't capable of that as well. So, and that's why we look to fill in. And you know, we push to have any type of radio service and any type of volunteer at the local level, whether it be with GMRS and even sometimes the old CB radios. You know, because they still work well. And if you've got a group of people that's all they have, use what you have, and that's what you use to get communication out. So.
Yeah. Do you need more people, especially as you're thinking about the unthinkable, something like a Cascadia event? Does the state or even the American Radio Relay League, and either one of you can answer, do we need more people to perhaps go through the certification and become ham radio operators?
From my perspective, yes, I think we do. Some of the larger cities have a large group of amateur radio volunteers, but some of the more rural counties have very few. And a lot are becoming older and are aging out. Their health limits their ability to participate. The county I'm involved in, most of our older people can no longer attend our meetings or participate in our activities unless they can attend by Zoom. But we're fortunate that we've had about seven new younger members in the last 6 months. So that's really helping us maintain our group. But it's still, even though I'm in Polk County, close to Salem, we're still pretty rural with no large cities in our county. And so we do have a pretty small group, and we're always looking for new people.
Got it. Same thing with you, Doug.
Yeah, and again, you know, we'll always take more volunteers, and you know, there's no age limit on them.
Sure.
You know, you can we've actually, one of my coworkers, his son has his technician class amateur radio license. He's 13.
Wow.
And he got his license at age 10. So you know, there's always that. And then we also work with the Boy Scouts every year, every October, and they do what's called a jamboree on the air. And they're trying to get their radio merit badges. So Oregon Emergency Management has always supported that effort. So we set up a remote station, usually out in Polk County at the Polk County Fairgrounds, and we allow the Boy Scouts to come in. And I guess it's just called Scouts because it's not just boys anymore, but we allow them to come in and make radio contacts across the world and across the country using our equipment.
Wow.
So we're really pushing hard to get more volunteers out there and a younger crowd to take the place of us old people.
Well, you serve a critical function. Thank you both for coming on. We've been talking with Bonnie Altus. She is a volunteer with the American Radio Relay League and also the Oregon Section Emergency Coordinator. And Doug Jimenez, he is an emergency communications officer with the Oregon Department of Emergency Management. Thank you both so much for coming on and talking about this really fascinating and important topic.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. It's my pleasure.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. On Monday, you'll hear from a scientist at the Cascade Volcano Observatory. We live in a region with many volcanoes, and they all vary in terms of threat level for eruption. I'm Michael Dunn, and this has been Oregon on the Record from KLCC. Thanks for listening.